All right, get ready, because today we're going deep into a Supreme Court case that's, well, it's like something straight out of history class.
Yeah.
But it has these twists and turns, and they still matter today.
Yeah.
We're talking Terry v. Adams from way back in 1953.
Okay.
It all centered around a private club called the Jaybird Democratic Association, and they had this shocking control over local elections in Fort Bend County, Texas.
Right.
They basically handpicked the winners for over 50 years, and get this, they excluded black voters the whole time.
Wow. What's so interesting is that this was all before the civil rights era, so it gives us a really unique look at how voter suppression worked. You know, even before those big laws like the Voting Rights Act came along,
Right.
this case really gets into how some people were trying to, I guess you could say, sidestep the 15th Amendment's ban on racial discrimination in voting.
Okay, so let's unpack this Jaybird Party. You mentioned they weren't officially part of the government.
Right.
So how did they manage to control elections for decades?
Well, their strategy was simple, but also kind of audacious. They held their own, like, unofficial pre-primaries, and those basically decided who would win the official Democratic primary and basically the general election after that.
Wow.
It was set up to give their candidate a sure win every time.
So they weren't just like a social club getting together to talk politics.
Oh, not at all. No, they ran these pre-primaries with all the bells and whistles of an official election. Polling places, ballots, the whole nine yards. They even charged membership fees.
Wow.
Can you imagine that? It just goes to show how organized they were, how entrenched the system was. They were a powerhouse controlling who could vote and essentially shutting out black
It's
voters.
amazing they were able to operate like that for so long in plain sight.
It is.
But how did this case end up in the Supreme Court?
Right.
Because it seems like a local issue, not something that would grab the attention of the highest court in the land.
You're right. It did start locally. But the legal questions it brought up were huge. The
Yeah.
case went through a real winding path through the courts.
Okay.
So first, the district court sided against the Jaybird Party,
Yeah.
but then the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, they reversed that decision.
Huh.
They said there wasn't enough evidence of, state action to bring in the 15th Amendment.
Oh, okay.
So this back and forth, it just highlights how complex this issue was and how even legal experts were really struggling with where the 15th Amendment began and ended.
Yeah, the state action doctrine, right? It's always a tricky thing in constitutional law.
It really is.
It's trying to define when a private group's actions are so tied to the state that the Constitution has to apply.
Exactly. And that's exactly why the Supreme Court decided to take on Terry v. Adams. They saw it as a case that raised these really fundamental questions about what state action meant when it came to voting rights, something so essential to our democracy.
Right.
And the implications, they reached far beyond just this one county in Texas.
Okay, so let's get to the heart of it. What did the Supreme Court actually decide? And what was their reasoning for striking down what the Jaybird Party was doing?
Well, the court ultimately sided with Terry, the person who brought the case,
Okay.
and they condemned what the Jaybird Party was doing. Justice Hugo Black, he wrote the majority opinion, and it's a landmark decision for sure. He went beyond just looking at the formal separation between public and private action, especially when it came to the right to vote.
So what was it about Justice Black's thinking that allowed the court to reach that decision?
Well, one of his key points was focusing on the functional control the Jaybird Party had over elections.
Okay.
He understood that even though they weren't officially part of the government, they were really, as he put it, the only effective part of the elective process in Fort Bend County.
Wow.
By keeping black voters out of their pre-primary, they were essentially denying them their constitutional right to participate in choosing their government.
So the court was basically saying, nice try with the whole private club thing, but we see right through it. You're the ones pulling the strings here, and that means you have to follow the Constitution.
Exactly. And to make his point even stronger, Justice Black drew a parallel to an earlier case, Smith v. Arrett from 1944. That case had outlawed whites-only primaries that were run by the state. He was showing how the court had already dealt with this kind of discrimination head-on, and they were determined to stop it from coming back through these seemingly private means.
So the Supreme Court was building on its own precedents, showing they were committed to closing these loopholes that were being used to disenfranchise black voters. It's fascinating to see how the court's thinking was evolving, recognizing that discrimination can wear many different masks.
It really is. Terry V. Adams shows how the court wrestled with these evolving forms of voter suppression and tried to reinforce the true purpose of the 15th Amendment.
Right.
But of course, there were other viewpoints within the court.
That's where it gets interesting for those of us who love to dig into the nuances of legal opinions.
Oh, absolutely.
So tell me, what other opinions were there in Terry V. Adams? Were there any dissenting voices?
Oh, for sure. We have a concurrence from Justice Tom C. Clark. He actually went a step further and emphasized the Jaybird Party's intent to dodge the 15th Amendment. To him, it was clear as day that they were copying the official Democratic Party, but with this, you know, discriminatory twist. He saw right through their private club act.
Sounds like there was no fooling Justice Clark.
Not at all. He wasn't going to let them get away with hiding behind legal technicalities. But then there's a dissent from Justice Sherman Minton. He argued that the 15th Amendment shouldn't even apply to private groups like the Jaybird Party.
Wait, so even on the Supreme Court, there was disagreement about whether this was unconstitutional.
Yep, and that's what makes these cases so fascinating. We see how legal interpretation works and how even the sharpest legal minds can come to different conclusions. Justice Minton, he called what the Jaybird Party was doing reprehensible, but he didn't think it was actually illegal under the 15th Amendment. He held the view that the 15th Amendment was meant to restrict the government, not private actions, even if those actions were discriminatory.
So even though everyone seemed to agree that what the Jaybird Party was doing was wrong, there was this big debate about where the line was between private action and state action, especially when it comes to that fundamental right to vote.
You got it. And that debate about the state action doctrine is something we're going to explore further as we look at the long-term implications of Terry v. Adams.
Okay, so we've established that Terry v. Adams was a landmark case and that it really changed how we understand the state action doctrine. But what's so captivating about this case is that it's still relevant to the issues we're dealing with today.
Oh, absolutely. It's not just some, you know, old legal precedent. It's a principle that's still alive and shaping how we think about voting rights in the 21st century.
I'm ready to hear more. Let's jump into those modern connections. Where do we start?
Well, let's start with gerrymandering, which has become a huge concern lately.
Right.
We've seen accusations that both parties are manipulating those district boundaries to weaken the voting power of certain groups. It's like they're rigging the system in their favor.
It's like a strategic game of Tetris. With voting districts, right? Trying to squeeze out every little advantage.
That's a great analogy. And while gerrymandering isn't a new thing, technology has made it so much more sophisticated, so much more precise. But here's where Terry v. Adams comes in. The logic of that case suggests that if one party is using something that seems neutral, like redistricting, but they're using it to systematically disadvantage another group's ability to elect their candidates well, that could be a constitutional issue.
So even though it's state legislatures doing the gerrymandering, and those are government entities, the Terry v. Adams precedent could still apply if the intention and the effect is to discriminate against a particular group of voters.
That's the core argument. It's not just about who's doing it, but about the impact it has on that fundamental right to vote. And remember, in Terry, the court was really worried about preventing people from finding sneaky ways around the 15th Amendment.
It's like the court was putting everyone on notice. Like, we see what you're trying to do, and we're not going to let you get away with it. It's amazing how a case from the 1950s can still be so powerful and relevant today.
I know, right? And that same logic could apply to other things we see today that might seem neutral on the surface, but actually have a discriminatory effect in practice.
I'm thinking about voter ID laws. They've been so controversial.
Oh, yeah.
Some people say they're necessary to prevent voter fraud, but others say they disproportionately disenfranchise minority voters who might not have the specific ID required.
That's a perfect example. The debate about voter ID laws is so complex, with strong arguments on both sides. But what Terry v. Adams gives us is a way to think about whether a law like that, that seems neutral, like a voter ID requirement, is actually being used to go against the 15th Amendment's guarantee of equal voting rights.
So even if a law doesn't explicitly say we're trying to stop certain people from voting, if it ends up disenfranchising a certain group, then it could be challenged based on the logic of Terry v. Adams.
That's it. Of course, proving discriminatory intent can be really tough. And historically, courts have given states a lot of freedom to set their own election rules. But Terry v. Adams gives us a solid legal basis for really scrutinizing laws that might seem harmless at first glance, but actually have a different impact in reality.
It emphasizes that we can't just look at what the law says. We have to look at its consequences in the real world, especially when it comes to something as fundamental as the right to vote. It makes us ask, is this law, intentionally or not, being used to silence certain groups of voters?
Exactly. And that brings us to another area where Terry V. Adams has huge implications, the influence of private money in elections.
Campaign finance. Always a hot topic.
Always.
We're talking about things like super PACs and dark money groups, right? The ones that can spend unlimited amounts on elections, but don't have to say who's giving them the money. It really makes you wonder, who's really in charge in our democracy?
That's it. And this is where the line between public power and private power gets really blurry. If rich donors or corporations can have too much influence on elections, whether through direct contributions or these big independent spending campaigns, does that start to look like the functional control the Supreme Court was worried about in Terry v. Adams?
It's a complicated issue. On one hand, we have the First Amendment protecting free speech, and that includes political spending. But then we have this idea of one person, one vote, meaning everyone's voice should count equally in the political process.
Yeah.
How do you balance those?
You've hit the nail on the head. There's no easy answer. And the courts have been struggling with this for years. But Terry v. Adams reminds us that we can't just ignore the potential for private power to, you know, mess with the democratic process, even if it's not coming directly from the government.
So we can't just say, oh, these are private groups spending their own money, so it's fine.
Yeah.
We have to look at whether that spending is tilting the playing field and making our elections unfair. It all goes back to that idea of substance over form that's all over Terry v. Adams.
Exactly. And if we decide that it is distorting the process, then we might need to think about ways to regulate that spending, even if it means tackling some tough questions about the First Amendment. It's a delicate balancing act.
This discussion really shows how Terry v. Adams isn't just a history lesson about a racist club in Texas. It's a principle that can be applied to so many important issues today. It makes us ask, are we really living up to the ideals of a fair and equal democracy?
It really does, and that's what makes studying constitutional law so interesting. These cases aren't just about the specific facts of the case. They're about lasting principles that can guide us as we face new and complex challenges.
It makes me wonder, what about social media's role in elections? We've seen how it can be used to spread misinformation, influence voters, even suppress voter turnout. Could the principles of Terry v. Adams apply to this digital world?
That is such a great question, and it's one that legal scholars are really trying to figure out right now. I mean, social media platforms are private companies, but they've become such important places for political discussion and sharing information. If they're being used to manipulate elections or stop people from voting, could we argue that they're essentially controlling a public process? Kind of like what the Jaybird Party did in Fort Bend County. It really makes you think.
It does. Makes you wonder how far the logic of Terry v. Adams can go. Could it be used to argue that social media companies have a responsibility to stop their platforms from being used to undermine democratic elections, even though they're not part of the government?
That's a question that courts might have to answer in the next few years. And it reminds us that Terry v. Adams isn't just a historical footnote. It's a principle that's alive and can help us navigate all the complexities of the digital age and make sure that our democracy stays fair and inclusive.
Wow. We've covered so much ground, from a little-known Supreme Court case to some of the biggest issues of our time, but there's even more to discuss. Let's take a minute to collect our thoughts, and then we'll come back to finish up this deep dive into Terry v. Adams and its lasting impact. Okay, we're back, and I gotta say, I'm still thinking about all the connections we made between this, you know, seemingly obscure case from the 50s and the voting rights issues we're dealing with right now. It's like Terry v. Adams planted this little seed, and it's grown into this huge, complicated tree, its branches touching everything in our political system.
That's a great way to put it. It shows how things that happen in the past, even if they seem isolated, can have these ripple effects that shape our present in ways we don't even realize.
So, as we wrap up this deep dive, what are the key takeaways you want listeners to remember about Terry v. Adams? What are the big lessons that still matter in today's world?
Well, the first thing is, this case really reminds us that the Constitution's protection against racial discrimination in voting, it doesn't just apply to the government, you know? It also applies to private groups or people who are essentially running the show when it comes to elections.
That's that substance over form principle we keep talking about, right?
Yeah, true.
The idea that the court looks past the labels and focuses on what's really happening.
Exactly. In Terry v. Adams, the court was totally focused on the effect of what the Jaybird Party was doing, not just the legal terms they were using to, like, hide behind. They saw through that and recognized the danger to the 15th Amendment.
Yeah, it's like the court was saying, we're not falling for your tricks. You can call yourselves a private club, but we see that you're manipulating the elections, and that's not okay.
Precisely. And that focus on substance over form has had a huge lasting impact on how we see voting rights and the state action doctrine in general. It set a precedent that's still shaping legal interpretations and challenges today.
So Terry v. Adams isn't just a history lesson. It's a living, breathing principle that applies to a ton of challenges to voting rights today.
Absolutely. We talked about how its principles can help us understand things like gerrymandering, voter ID laws, campaign finance, even how social media affects elections. And I bet smart lawyers will keep finding new ways to use the lessons of Terry v. Adams for new challenges in the future.
It's amazing how this case has taken on a life of its own, almost like it's inspired a whole movement of lawyers and activists to use its principles in the fight for a more inclusive democracy.
It's true. And that's what's great about our legal system. Landmark cases like Terry v. Adams, they don't just settle one argument, you know. They create a whole set of precedents that can be used to shape future decisions and help our society move towards a more just future.
It's like an ongoing conversation, evolving with every generation. New voices and perspectives are always adding to the debate about what it really means to have a government that represents everyone.
I love that analogy. It's a constant process of changing and adapting, and cases like Terry v. Adams give us a crucial roadmap for that complicated journey.
Before we finish up, I have to ask, is there one big, thought-provoking question that Terry v. Adams raises for us today? Something that will make our listeners think about it long after this episode is over.
You know, there's one question that's been on my mind. Could we use the ideas in Terry v. Adams to challenge how algorithms and artificial intelligence are becoming so powerful in our lives, especially when it comes to decisions that affect our democracy?
That's a really interesting and relevant question. Wait. What makes you think of that connection?
Well, think about it. Algorithms are making more and more decisions that have a huge impact on us.
Right.
They choose what news we see, what ads we get, who gets hired for jobs, even who gets parole. And often these algorithms are made and controlled by private companies.
True. And there's been a lot of concern about how transparent these algorithms are and whether they have biases built into them.
Mm-hmm.
But how does this connect to Terry v. Adams?
The question is, if these algorithms have such a big influence on our lives, shaping what we know and what opportunities we have, could we say they're actually using a kind of public power even if private companies created them? Are they, in a way, controlling a public process like the Jaybird Party did?
Wow, that's a mind-blowing idea. It makes you wonder if Terry v. Adams could be a way to hold these companies accountable and make sure their algorithms are fair and equitable, that they're not being used to manipulate or discriminate.
Exactly. It reminds us that the fight for a fair and equal society never ends, and we have to watch out for new threats to our freedom and equality, even if they come in the form of things that seem as neutral as algorithms.
That's a powerful thought to leave us with. Thanks for taking us on this deep dive into Terry v. Adams and all its implications. It's a case that keeps sparking important conversations about power, discrimination, and the fight for voting rights in our ever-changing democracy. Thanks for listening to The Deep Dive. See you next time.